The Secrets of Star Wars is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
Hey, this is Matt Landrieu, the voice of Anakin Skywalker in Star Wars The Clone Wars. You're listening to The Secrets of Star Wars. This is where the fun begins.
Hello there.
It's a power that Jedi have that lets them control people and make things float.
Impressive. Every word in that sense was wrong.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
That's not how the Force works.
Force is with me, and I am with the Force, and I fear nothing.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
You're listening to The Secrets of Star Wars, where we talk about everything connected to that galaxy far, far away. In movies, books, TV shows, and much more, we're looking at the deeper themes and meanings found in the Star Wars universe. And today we are discussing the penultimate episode of The Bad Batch, entitled Flash Strike. Be sure to follow The Secrets of Star Wars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your favorite podcast app, or on the StarQuest YouTube channel. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, on X, where we are at SQPN, and on Instagram, where we are at StarQuest Network. And be sure to get your official Secrets of Star Wars gear over at SQPN.com/merch. I'm your host, Thomas Salerno, and joining me tonight on the panel is John Coral. Hello, John.
Hello.
And Catherine Laffrey. Hey there, Catherine.
Hello.
All right. So as usual, spoilers are on. And before we dive into our analysis of this episode, here's a brief recap of what happens. It's another happy landing for the Bad Batch as Hunter, Wrecker, Crosshair, and Rampart arrive on Tantus, only to have their stolen shuttle shot down by turbo lasers and Imperial V-Wing fighters. The squad has to hoof it through the monster-infested jungle to reach the base with the ex-Vice Admiral in tow. But in the general melee of another giant monster attack, Rampart is captured by patrolling troopers. Meanwhile, Echo, now disguised as a stormtrooper minus one hand, sneaks into the facility from his hiding spot on the Imperial cargo vessel. Echo finds his way to the main lab where he encounters Emery and confronts her about her complicity in the evils of the Empire. Emery agrees to help Echo breach the vault and rescue Omega along with the other captive children. In the vault, Omega sneaks her way into the lift shafts from the panel in her cell, and she discovers that the Empire is holding the Zillow Beast on Tantus and are torturing it. Omega returns to the vault without being caught and informs the other kids that she has a plan. Okay, so it's interesting, and we were all kind of chatting about this before we hit record, but this did not seem to me like a penultimate episode, like an episode before the finale. Are we really wrapping up this week, next week? Well, what do you guys think?
I felt like this was the end of the episode from the week before.
Yeah.
I mean, I should have known from the title, Flash Strike S. You flash and it's over and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it feels more like it's getting ready to wrap up a season instead of a series.
Yes.
You know, you could kind of see, okay, they're lining up and then, you know, what's going to happen in the last episode, you know, in the next episode, and then that'll set up for the next season, but it's not. So I'm curious to see how they're going to fill that all in.
Yeah, this felt like The Mandalorian, like that episode before they rescue Grogu. You know, it felt like that, where it felt like, yeah, like the next episode is going to wrap up a story arc, but that there's still more to go. But we know that this is the final season. They've said so.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. unless they give us like an hour and a half or a 2-hour episode next week,
please.
I doubt it. But yeah. You know, geez, yeah. I don't know. It just feels It doesn't feel like this is happening. It doesn't feel like we're wrapping up.
The music threw me off. The opening music. Because you have this drums of war opening music. I was expecting just an epic 45 minutes at least. Mm-hmm. And then it was just kind of like, what? It's over?
Yeah.
What just happened?
These last two episodes have gone by really fast. They felt like, you know, they've gone by really fast, but at the same time, it doesn't feel like much happens in them. Like, yeah. In this episode, you know, they get to Tantus. The batch is trying to get to the base. Omega figures out a way of possibly escaping. And yeah, and I feel like there's all kinds of threads dangling around. Like, you know, we see Hemlock for a couple seconds and then he's gone. And there's just all these moving pieces that, man, and next week they have a huge job of having to bring all these disparate threads together. But I think besides that, I was just going to mention this. Some things have just dropped off the radar this season. Besides that one episode, we have not seen like Senator Chuchi and the other senators who are kind of starting the rebellion again. I thought they were going to be a big part of this season, and now they're just gone.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they're just going to show up in the end. I hope so. Something's got to happen with the cavalry, right?
Yeah, and then Rex and his squad are out there somewhere.
Yes, and also, like, after you had Nala Se in the beginning, she's been kind of pushed aside, too, for a while. Mm-hmm. And it's like, is Omega, you know, it's like if she wants to get away with these kids, does she also want to get a Nala Se rescue, too? I mean, it's just, I mean, or is it only the clones and the kids? I don't know.
Right, yeah.
Then the big shocker, Echo has ears?
Oh, yeah, people are talking about that. Yeah, that also threw me off. I did, because, like, people are saying that, like, yeah, like, because he has the thing, like, that Lobot has in The Empire Strikes Back, and that the Rodian guy had in Rebels. And we always assumed that you couldn't take those off. Although, Echo's may be a more primitive version of it, I guess.
Because his helmet that he wears actually has like a gap in it so that he always has it on.
Yes. Yeah.
So seeing him, you know, put on that trooper's hat or helmet is like, what?
Yeah, because he had to take the thing off to get the stormtrooper helmet on.
Mm-hmm.
But I had no clue he could take that off. Like, if we've seen that before, I've completely forgotten about it.
Yeah. I forgot to go back and look to see what he looked like when they rescued him. Did he have it on then? Or?
Oh, yeah.
When's the last time we saw his ears?
Yeah, because I remember when they got him out of that, in the Bad Batch arc of the Clone Wars, when they get him out of that tube, he's got all those wires attached to those nodes on the top of his skull. But I can't remember if he's got the thing that wraps around your ears. Yeah. And in terms of, like, Echo being disguised as a stormtrooper and all, I liked that whole thing of, like, you know, him just going around and scomping into everything. He takes that one droid's hand, yes. You know?
I loved that, especially when they showed his little drive arm stuck for a moment. I was like, this is going to be a big thing that he's got a little, you know, mechanical arm sticking out of that outfit. But to see him, thanks for the hand.
Yeah, thanks for the hand.
Wow.
I thought it was interesting that there's an early bit where the base is on lockdown because they've seen the shuttle coming in. And they start firing off turbo lasers. And then the base goes into lockdown protocols. And Emery has to leave the lab for a bit. And she says to that other scientist lady there, monitor the children in my absence. To which the other scientist replies, your concern for the specimens is unwarranted. So Emery is the only one there calling them children. All the other scientists just call them specimens. And I guess Emery started out also calling them specimens, but has now fully transitioned into calling them what they are. They are as children, you know.
Well, yeah, she got reprimanded when she started asking names.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I was kind of wondering, though, why does she leave but not the other doctor? Or what's the, you know, the purpose of that other than to build the tension when Omega makes her move, I guess. But
it was funny. I didn't catch that line that she said until the second watching, where she says, "I need to go secure the lab." Like it's her big responsibility now.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay. But then again, yes, it also works great to build the tension and Omega have some fun.
I feel like, and this is my own headcanon, that this base was built kind of slapdash, and they have not put in like inertial dampeners in this place because the turbo laser, the vibrations from the turbo laser turrets can be felt down in the vault. So I'm like, did you guys not put inertial dampeners in here? They're Star Wars OSHA is going to get on you guys, you know, like safety protocols are not in enough. You know, but of course, this is the Empire who, as we know, always has those big pits everywhere with no railings. So they're not interested in safety protocols.
No need for that. Either that or those cannons are a whole lot bigger than you think.
It's right. Yeah. Yeah. They look like the same ones that are on the Death Star.
Yeah.
The turbo laser cannons. They look exactly like it.
And supposedly on the Death Star, when you see them running in the hallway, you can hear the echo in the background of the cannons going off. But I love that flight scene on the way in. Oh, I mean, and the action was great.
Yeah.
Some awesome flight maneuvers.
I didn't know that shuttle could do that.
Oh, that's beautiful. Put it in stall, slide it around. Awesome. But the best thing I loved about it, the clouds were incredible. The artwork was just like, take those little, you know, ships out of there and you've got this beautiful sky. I was hoping they were going to use Fee's move and just, you know, dead stick it down.
Oh, yeah. Turn off all the power in the ship and do the stealth entry. Yeah, because you think that would be an interesting comeback. Like, oh, we learned this from Fee and then they do it that way. That would have been neat.
I just like the action, too, about how quick things moved, like how Hemlock, or what's that, his, what's it, Scorch or something, was saying, explaining to Hemlock the whole situation, and he's like, all right, we're going to do this, this, and this, because he knows the Bad Batch are very dangerous. And then the fact that, just how quick that went in, and, you know, I like that part a lot, too. And then Crosshair talking about, they're expecting us and all this stuff. I mean, they're not coming in stealth or anything, and it was just, and actually the one thing I like too, besides, you know, the clouds and stuff, but I love the sound of the ships as they were coming in too.
Yes.
I felt like I was actually watching a Star Wars movie and not an animated show.
Mm-hmm. I caught too that like the V-Wings kind of sound like TIE Fighters, but they're slightly different. It's like the same sound, but like modulated a bit.
And does anyone else think the science vessel looks like some of the science droids? When you look at the science vessel straight on, it's got like this straight section and then two round sections on either side. And it looks like the eyes of some of the science droids that are working down in the vault.
I think, yeah, it looks like it's got two giant headlights, like their eyes. Yeah, maybe they wanted to make that visual connection. Science, you know, this is what science looks like in Star Wars. But I like how Omega, she is really one of the batch now. Like, we've talked about this in previous episodes. She's not like a normal child anymore. She is in the zone. Like, when her and the other kids are together, it's so obvious how she is not like these other kids. You know, that she is a child who has been completely, like, trained how to handle herself in a crisis situation. You know, she almost acts like a little adult.
Oh, definitely.
And I did like hearing when she was talking about them to, what was it, like, cover me. And they're like, cover you?
Yeah.
What does that mean? You know, and it's like, yeah. But you can just tell the difference of, you know, where she's been and where they've been all this time and stuff. And I liked how they did try to cover for her. They did try. It was cute, but
yeah. Can I go now? You know, like,
yeah. And I love the subtle little thing with a little toddler. So you get the big tremor that knocks down Jax's stack of chips.
Mm-hmm.
And then the toddler's just like, hey, yay, click, click, click.
Yeah.
Then it gets sleepy. Do it again. You
know, yeah. I was wondering, do those games serve any kind of purpose other than, because they say they make us do them, but I'm like, do they make the children do those games just to keep their minds occupied? Because otherwise they would have nothing to do. Or do you think it serves some purpose of gauging their force sensitivity or something? I don't know.
I feel like it's the second one. I think they are just constantly testing them to see, you know, what are they going to do next? Because early on, some of the games looked like they were actually, you know, like manipulating things in a way that normally wouldn't stack up and stay. You know what I mean? So it kind of seemed like, are they using a little bit of their force sensitivity to arrange the pieces?
Yeah, I don't know.
I know, there's not like, the games though aren't like, you know, something. I mean, they're all sitting at tables doing stuff too. So it's not like, oh, throw this ball over here and see if you can, you know, and, you know, manipulate it through the air like the toddler did that one, you know, or did some, you know, when they noticed he had force sensitivity. But I mean, I do think there has to be something with that because, I don't know, you just don't want them losing, I guess, any kind of, you know, edge or, you know, level of ability that they do have, I would guess. I don't know. I mean, I would think you'd want to keep it somewhat sharp, even if they don't know what they're doing.
Right, yeah. Where, like, the kids don't know consciously what the purpose is, but the scientists do. I was also wondering, like, you would think, okay, there's an access panel to the lift shaft in those little rooms of theirs. You'd think that there would be an alarm that goes off if one of those is pried open. But no, there is not.
Yeah, some sort of motion sensor.
Right, or especially like if you know, you don't, like in those tubes, there's those little, I don't know what they are, cargo pods that like move around. You'd think you would not want somebody in there. Like, I know people would have to go in there to maybe service them or like droids, but you'd think that like if there would be motion sensors that would sense a person or a droid in there and then everything would stop, you know, but no. But again, I guess this is the Empire. They don't care.
Yeah. Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. And we'll get back to those lift shafts later, but there's some interesting stuff in this episode about Crosshair's motivations. I forget who he says this to, but he says, Omega didn't leave me behind when she could have. I owe her. Mm-hmm. So he's doing this for Omega. You know, oh, right. It's when he's talking to Wrecker.
Yeah.
Because right. There's Wrecker's like, you've been here before. And he's like, yeah, it's not a place I really wanted to come back to.
Yeah.
You know, but he's doing this for Omega.
And you see him shake his hand again. Mm-hmm. So this is the point of his tremors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did like some of that in those scenes, though, too. It's like the humor that brought in, like, well, at least you're breaking in this time, you know.
Yeah.
And then Rampart stuff, too, before that, you know, with exiting the shuttle and stuff.
Yeah, where he's like, you know, just dangling. Of course, his rappel winch gets jammed. And so
yeah, but Hunter like has part, to save him. What do you want me to do? Try not to hit anything on the way down.
Yes. Right.
You know.
And he's like, what?
Yeah. And Wrecker tell him you don't want to know.
Right. Yeah. You can tell that, like, he never had to do any of this at the Imperial Naval Academy. This was not on his radar at all. All
right.
Nope. Someone paid for his cush, you know, quick rise to admiral.
Yeah, he was on the command track. You know, he didn't have to do any of this other stuff. And speaking of Rampart and Crosshair's loyalty, there's an interesting exchange between Rampart and Crosshair, where Rampart says to Crosshair, "You're like me, loyal to no one but yourself." To which Crosshair says, "No, I've changed." And Rampart just goes, "Sure you have." And I'm like, what does he mean by that? Is that just Rampart's blindness to the fact that people can change? Or does Rampart know something that only him and Crosshair know that the viewers haven't been told yet?
I think it might be a little more the first, I would think. I mean, maybe there's plenty of people. Well, I think there's a couple things, because everybody keeps like, "Well, we're going to fight the Empire." And they're like, "You're really going to fight the Empire?" And I think like there's a lot of people probably that go in with the grand idea, "Oh, we can make change," but they actually don't change, you know, and it's like once they see the task in front of them, they're like, "Okay, well, I guess we'll just live with this." And I think maybe that's what he's kind of thinking of is, okay, Crosshair says he's changed and he's doing this, but when a push comes to shove, he'll just be back to the same old Crosshair, covering for himself, whereas we believe that no, he's doing it for a higher level of his, you know, especially Omega.
Yeah.
And because she believes in him. But I think that's the thing. It's because constantly, even Hunter, you know, keeps telling Echo, you know, "You can't beat the Empire," and all these kind of things. And you have the people that believe they can make change even against all odds. And then you have others that sometimes get pulled along, and then the others probably that just say, start with the idea, but then back off because it's too daunting.
Right. Yeah, Hunter just wanted to lay low, to give Omega a normal life, and to just kind of be on Pabu. It was a safe place, you know. And yeah, you're right. Him and Rex were always having that debate where Rex is like, you know, "We need you out here fighting the Empire." And Hunter's just like, "No, I've got this kid to take care of." And yeah, and then that makes me think, like, if we're wrapping up next episode, what's going to be the conclusion of that arc? Like, what's going to happen to the Bad Batch, you know?
Right.
I hope we don't lose anybody else, but we very well might. But that would seem kind of abrupt to me, almost.
It's going to be interesting to see how Rampart being captured is going to fit into the conclusion.
Yes.
Because, you know, what is he going to say? "Yep, they're here." "Well, yeah, we know they're here." You know, it's, or "I'll help you catch them." And it's like, I don't think so. Because I don't think he does not get Crosshair at all.
No, because
if he did, he wouldn't have treated him the way he did as nobody when he had him. And then, yeah, just the fact that he just doesn't get it is the best way to I can think of it. Cause I think about when he shot that one guy. Wasn't that Rampart?
Oh, the clone who wouldn't cover up that thing.
Yeah, he wouldn't cover up the fact that the Bad Batch was still alive.
Because
he said they were dead. So it's like, yeah. And if he would have known Crosshair, or thinking Crosshair would give up or give them up and turn them in, he would have done that earlier on.
Right.
Crosshair alone. Yeah. So it's like he didn't give them up early on. He's not going to give them up now.
Yeah. And Rampart's a very small man. You know, he could act big and tough when he was a powerful vice admiral. But you see, when all that is stripped away, how very kind of petty and small he is. And yeah, I don't know what he can really do. He can't tell the Empire anything that they don't know already.
Did somebody on Discord say that he's like Dr. Smith in Lost in Space?
Oh! Wait, from the remake?
Both Dr. Smiths are rather shifty and out for themselves. So
right, yeah. I was thinking of the movie, which I unfortunately saw in theaters. what wasn't Gary Oldman Dr. Smith in that? I think he was. I can't remember. Yeah,
Yeah.
That was an unfortunate theater experience. Even as a kid, I didn't like that movie. Anyway, but yeah, Rampart is Dr. I see what you mean by that, because yeah, Dr. Smith and Lost in Space is always just out for themselves, and but I feel like he's not as smart as Dr. Smith.
Yes.
You know, like, you know.
Oh yeah.
And
I was hoping that big thing would eat him.
Oh, yeah. it just proves that, like, Wrecker's joke from a few episodes ago is true. There's always a giant monster somewhere in here. And there's going to be a giant monster next week, apparently, because the Empire is so stupid to have to keep the Zillow Beast in the same facility where they are also doing other important work that the Emperor is really interested about cloning. I know that they want to clone the Zillow Beast so they can replicate its armor and stuff, but couldn't you do it at a facility elsewhere on the planet? Because you've got a whole planet and you keep this giant Godzilla-sized monster in a place where... Because we all know what's going to happen. It's going to break out and wreck the facility. Omega's going to break it out. As soon as I saw that, I was like, that's their ticket out.
And she'll probably be the only one to be able to control the beast.
Oh, you know what? Well, because she saw Asajj Ventress control the Kraken monster thing a few episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought of that like if Omega, now there's a debate as, you know,
hey,
is she force
Batcher
sensitive or not? She did. She seems to have a thing for animals,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Asajj was kind of like ambiguous as to whether Omega is really force sensitive or not, or just able to transfer M count. So,
hey, and don't forget, she rode a Rancor.
Oh, right. what was that thing's name again? Moochie?
Moochie? Moochie.
Moochie, yeah. But yeah, we may see her control the beast. That would be pretty cool. I'm really glad they brought the Zillow Beast back. I mean, we saw it last season. Because yeah, that was one of the things from the Clone Wars that I was really hoping that they'd resolve and that they wouldn't just forget about. You know, as anyone who listens to SQPN knows, I love giant monster movies. I've done a few Godzilla reviews for Secrets of Movies and TV. I love and the Zillow Beast. I mean, just its name. It's a very obvious Godzilla homage, and yeah, I want to see it wreck house next episode. That's gonna be awesome. But I felt that was clever. Like, it gives them a way to break out of this place that's not just the normal we sneak in and shoot all the guards and blast our way out and break out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, what else? Oh yeah, Echo and Emery.
Yeah,
that was the other big thing for me in this episode. Having that interaction was very interesting. Something Emery said was interesting, that she said, okay, she figured it was Echo for some reason. And then she said that Omega had told her about each of the Bad Batch. And I'm like, well, I wonder when that happened. Like, we didn't see it.
They're together for a long time.
Months, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, when she was doing her little marks on the wall when she was first there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was, they said it was up to 5 months or something like that. So, you know, they did have a lot of time together.
It felt to me like at that period, though, Emery wasn't much of a conversationalist,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But we know Omega likes to talk.
That's true.
She's a teenage girl. What, preteen? Maybe she's 13 now. Chatty, chatty girl.
Well, what's interesting, though, too, with that interaction was, I mean, how Emery knew Echo and probably would know the other Bad Batch from what Omega said. But then Echo said, well, she told us a lot about you as well. And he said, you know, she saw something in you. I want to believe she was right. And I'm curious, it's like with her interactions, that's pretty interesting to think there's more to this Emery. And, you know, I guess maybe when she gave back the doll and stuff and found that there was more of a heart to her when, you know, Hemlock took it away and things. But, you know, it's just so she does. Of course, Omega can find the good in everyone. So,
yeah. And that's been a huge theme of this season and this whole series, is that Omega finds the good in everybody, you know, whether it's Crosshair or, you know, I guess the only person you can't really find much good in is Dr. Hemlock. But
you know, one of the darkest scenes in this whole episode. The lighting was darkest on him. On Hemlock, so it was like, okay, yeah, we're gonna keep pushing this guy into the shadows because he's just dark,
dark and icky, yeah. But if there's even a spark of light in you, Omega will grasp onto that and and make it grow. You know,
I liked how Echo reveals truly himself as soon as he and Emery make that connection. He takes his helmet off. And that's what I love about the Bad Batch throughout this. When they really make a connection with someone, they'll take their helmets off.
Yes.
So it's like, this is truly me, you know, kind of thing. They're not hiding behind a mask anymore. And I was like, I am still waiting for Emery to take the glasses off. Stop looking through those Empire shaded glasses.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, she did say, you know, I was just doing my job. So, you know, she's still holding on to, I was doing the right thing, but I was glad Echo called her out on it.
Yeah, he said, I've heard that before. And it's like, you know, we've all heard it. And like, that is, you know, that was the famous excuse, you know, right at the Nuremberg trials after World War II. So many of them said, I was just following orders. And it's like, yeah, but you have a conscience. You know, you shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't. And then that's the thing, too, that calls back to an earlier season where, you know, there was that debate of like, you know, well, first of all, you had Order 66 where the clones had been brainwashed to just blindly follow orders. You had Crosshair's good soldiers follow orders mantra that he was always repeating. You had when the Empire destroyed Kamino and then The Emperor spun it with like fake news to say that, oh, the clones destroyed Kamino because they blindly follow orders. You know, there's been this. That's why we have to replace them with stormtroopers. So there's been this theme throughout the whole show of, you know, do you follow, you know, of conscience? Even Crosshair says it. I forget whether it was this episode or the previous one where, you know, Rampart's like, I thought your thing was good soldiers follow orders. And Crosshair says, depends who's giving them.
Yes.
Yeah, that was this episode. Because
that was this episode. Okay.
Right. Yeah. When he's getting into the discussion with the, you know, how he's just like Hemlock and looking out for himself. He's like, didn't you believe in that? And
it just continues. No, I'm sorry, John.
No, I was just going to say, I like how, you know, Echo is sympathetic and stuff, but boy, when you know, when he has that opening and she's like, I was just doing my job, he's like, yeah, I've heard that before, you know. And it's like, and he's pretty stern because he's like, look, you're a clone, and how can you do, you know, it's not like, you know, he can be somewhat sympathetic, but he's pretty, you know, strict. And when he, you know, he knows what, you know, what's at stake and what should be done, and you know, you can see the leadership that he has for that. Like, I'm sure Rex is like that too and stuff, but it's just, you know, I think that helps probably Emery want to work with him too, because, you know, he can actually say, no, it's not really a gray area. This is black and white, and this is, you know, this is the safe thing. And what's interesting though, too, with all that is, and I guess Omega didn't know, even though she spent all that time there before, all the children that were part of the testing, and because he wasn't aware of that, and I'm sure Omega would have told everybody, oh yeah, they got lots of kids there too, and not just clones.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Echo, when he was part of the Bad Batch, he was always the conscience of the team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was his role, really, you know. And then part of why, you know, he left to be with Rex and his squad was that he wanted to be doing more. He's like, I can't just sit here. Like, this injustice needs to be actively fought against. We can't just sit around, you know.
Especially knowing for how long Echo is being used against his own brothers.
Yeah.
So he would really want to get things right as soon as possible.
It's interesting that Emery said, you'll never be able to get into the vault without me. And I'm like, okay. But what's the plan? Like, I'm just wondering about that. I'm like, how is she going to get him in there? That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, will he be able to walk in with her as a new guard? Possibly.
Ooh, I just had a thought. And this would be difficult, but I think a member of the Bad Batch would be one of the only people who could do this. Take out a commando and suit up as their armor, because the commandos seem to be the only clones who are allowed in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's Emery can make it, you know, seem like, hey, we need to control the children. We've got a situation. I'm taking in force with me. So that could get him in there. The thing that would be really crazy, though, is they're going to get into the vault and the kids are gone because they're up the elevation and the elevator shaft, which is kind of fits into Jurassic Park a little bit. One of the newer ones where you have the granddaughter. She takes off in the dumbwaiter.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And she ends up down with the dinosaurs and stuff. So that's kind of funny. They are kind of using the dumbwaiter to go get the dinosaur.
Or it reminds me even of the first Jurassic Park where there's a false ceiling and they're crawling around up there in with the vents and the air conditioning and all that other stuff. And, you know, but the velociraptors can still track them from below, you know, and there's a scene where it looks up and then busts through the ceiling. That's the thing I like about Star Wars. It always takes, like, things from many other different media and repurposes them to its own, you know, Star Wars flavor.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I was even just talking about Cartoon Salon movie, The Secret of Kells, and there's several like overhead views of either like a village or the forest that make these circles, and it's just like the top down view of Tantus. It looked almost the same, and I was like going, wow, I've seen that so many times lately. It's kind of crazy. It keeps popping up.
I was hoping that inside those shafts, like, because there's those things that move around, and if you could like somehow get on those, it would be like the Temple of Doom, like minecart thing. That would be kind of fun.
Oh,
you know, like them and all the kids in like this container going around.
It's neat to see how those things can change direction so quickly too. You know, with the north, south, east, west kind of tunnels.
So yeah, like that. Yeah, that's pretty much all that happens in this episode, right? I think we covered most of the major beats, unless I missed something huge.
Well, we have been talking for twice the length of the episode.
I mean, that's true. Yeah.
I still can't get over how fast that was.
Yeah, it was over before you knew it. And I was like, really? It's almost like they could have combined, I think we said this at the top, they could have combined last week's and this week's into one long episode, you know, or released it as a two-parter.
Yeah.
Because it kind of felt like, or last week kind of felt like a part one, to which this was a part two of.
Well, just one thing I did like a little bit too, though, was when, you know, in the beginning too, when they hear the guns firing and the children are like, they, you know, what is that? And she goes, and then she explains them about the laser cannons and stuff. Then she says, they found me, my brothers. You know, it's like, it's really neat. And that, because she just seems, oh, confident that they were going to be there anyways.
Yeah.
And then later on, you know, when Emery says, she said her squad would, you know, eventually come for her. So it's like, so obviously Omega, when you're talking to Emery and then again, these kids and stuff, it's just like, she obviously has incredible faith in the Bad Batch that they'll, you know, do all they can for her, which is really neat.
I love that.
Yeah. And the fact that that she tells other people it, and they're like, hey, this is what she said was going to happen, and here it's happening. You know, it's, that was that was pretty neat. I mean, it's because the whole time you just, you know, whereas the first time she was there, you could see how sad she was. This time she's just like, just seeing that, you know, big level of confidence that she has that, okay, things are going to work out, you know, even though, what's his name, Crosshair didn't attach the beacon to the ship. Like she said, oh, you're going to do that. You know, still things are working out for, you know, that, for her, because of the confidence she has in their abilities and their want to get to her, you know.
It's definitely the will of the Force.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I think I said this last week that the Bad Batch's strategy in any situation is, we'll just wing it until we win. You know what? We'll just keep trying whatever works and go to the next thing. And we encounter an obstacle, we'll try something else. We'll just keep doing stuff until we win. And that's, it's proved a successful strategy for them in the past.
Like, look at their confidence in Echo. Mm-hmm. Echo, wait, he's on the other ship. Yeah, he'll find a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure enough.
He'll figure it out.
Found a way.
Yeah.
It'll be great when they finally realize, hey, good, you did it. Good job.
So what are you guys hoping for next week? The big finale.
Well, Thomas, you put it on Discord for me. You had the big old Godzilla picture. I was like, yes. I am so hoping for the Zilla Beast to have his revenge.
Yes. Yeah. And he's got a nice jungle planet to live, a forever home to live on for the rest of his days.
I don't know. I'm kind of cautiously optimistic that it'll wrap up relatively happily. But you can just see how they're lining things up. It's like, or potentially, it's like, is Dr. Carr, Emery going to be someone that is going to help them and make some potential sacrifice, you know, to help Omega out, or is it going to be like Crosshair making a sacrifice? Because with Rampart telling him, oh yeah, you're just like me, looking out for yourself. Well, will he do something that doesn't look out for himself to save his brothers or Omega or something like that? And, you know, kind of like how Tech did, you know, and it's like, those are the kind of things. It's like, you can see how they could be maybe lining something up, but then at the same time, you know, sometimes when there's all this potential for dread, they wrap up a series, maybe not a series, but the show, you know, with more positive things, like with The Mandalorian, this, you know, when everything seemed lost or whatever in the last season. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, but I'm hoping things work out where there's a somewhat happy ending. You know, it's like, but I don't know what. Maybe the Zilla Beast eating Dr. Hemlock, you know, but.
Yes! That would be great. The monster, because they're clearly experimenting on it or torturing it. And it's like the Frankenstein thing. The monster has to kill the mad scientist, you know? And I've wanted Hemlock to have a suitably over-the-top death. Or it's like, this is a weird connection, but it's like the end of Hook, where the crocodile comes back to life at the end and eats it.
Yes. That'd be a great ending.
That was always my favorite part of that movie. Because I always rooted for the crocodile. I wonder, too, if this is not the last we've seen of the Bad Batch. You know, that this is the ending of the show that's named after them, but that we but that we've not seen the last of them, you know, that they'll continue this story thread in some way, in some fashion, you know. I mean, we thought the Clone Wars was the end of the clone story, and it was not. So, I mean, we still have to know how Rex, Gregor, and Wolf get that tank onto that desert planet that they were stuck on in Rebels.
Go jungle hunting. There is one visual that I picked up on in this episode that I hadn't seen before. I mean, first of all, depending on atmospheric conditions, you know whether something's going to be good or bad happening. So we had a little break in the clouds over Mount Tantus in a long shot video. But it also showed a stream running from Mount Tantus that I had never noticed before. So is there life flowing from the side on this one now? I don't know. But it just kind of seemed like there's like, like there's something new about to happen, kind of thing. A little bit of life.
Well, yeah. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
I'm just looking forward to seeing how they do it, and hopefully it'll be a little longer episode than these last couple to try to tie it all up.
All right. So, but before we go, we would like to take a moment to thank our patrons, who make the secrets of Star Wars possible. And we'd like to thank tonight Lucas W., Shelley W., Andrea F., Roxanne F., and Angela S. Their generous donations help us to continue to create the secrets of Star Wars and all of our shows here at StarQuest, and you can join them at sqpn.com/give. And of course, we'd like to hear from you, our listeners. What did you think of Flash Strike? What are your predictions for the big finale of the Bad Batch? You can let us know by sending us an email at starwars@sqpn.com. You can tag us on our social media pages or leave a comment on our channel on the StarQuest Discord server, which you can find at sqpn.com/discord. And until next time, John Coral, thank you for joining me in sharing the secrets of Star Wars.
Thank you. It was fun.
And Catherine Laffrey, thank you as well.
Thank you, Thomas.
And once again, I'm Thomas Salerno. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Star Wars on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy. Let's Science. Find the show wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/science.